All right, up next we have Carl Kuhn. He is a principal solution architect for Telstream, specializing in next gen tests and measurement of ST2110 IP, ST2059, all the fun acronyms. He is also a SMPTE fellow as of 2015, I believe. Is that correct? Okay. And he'll be talking with us about taking our regular 2110 IP into the 2059 PTP, how to transition in that. So take away for Carl.
Good morning, everyone. Appreciate you taking time out of your very busy schedules to be here today, because I know how much of a challenge it is to get away for an event like this. But what you're doing is something you have to do to stay current in your career. And it's good to see. I understand your membership is around 300 or so. That's impressive. That shows that your organization is bringing value to the membership. I'm from Washington, D.C. area, Northern Virginia, and SMPTE is very popular there. So I got involved with SMPTE 20 years ago, and it's one of the best things I ever did for my career. So getting involved in professional organizations is something I highly recommend. If you're a member, great. If you're a member, then get more involved. If you're more involved, get more involved, because to pull off an event like this, because I worked my way up from the local level to national level, now I'm the national membership chair for North America, and I'm out there trying to help local sections stay viable and help create with Bill Bennett the Pittsburgh section a few years ago, so it's good to get more organizations out there to actually meet the needs of membership. Also, it's good to be reaching out to younger people, because I was a SMPTE denier for about half of my career. I had every excuse not to go to meetings. I lived in the suburbs of Virginia, and most of the meetings were closer to D.C. I had small children, so I had every excuse not to go to meetings. And finally, the guy that I ended up replacing, he said, you gotta go, because I was an R&D test guy at IBM, and he said, you have to get out of your little silo and see what the rest of the world is doing. And I had every excuse. He finally said, you gotta go to this meeting tonight. I went to the meeting, and what I realized very quickly, I've been involved in video since ninth grade, and there was a lot of things being discussed in that meeting I knew nothing about. So I said, wow, this is intimidating. So I forced myself to go to meetings, and I learned and learned and learned and eventually got more involved, and it's the best thing I ever did for my career. It's very satisfying. Because what it forces you to do at a minimum is put a date on a calendar to learn something new and to meet someone new. And in today's world, you can't be doing too much of either one of those. So enough on that sales pitch, but very good to see. And I know what it takes to pull off an event like this, so your leadership is to be commended, but they always need more help. So I'm Carl Kuhn, and Doug Hinojera back there is your local guy. So if you have any questions and needs as far as what we're talking about here or the broader portfolio of Telestream, please let us know. We're here to help. So there's the broader portfolio, because Tektronix Video is now part of Telestream. So it's one big happy family. So anything you need as far as the entire workflow from acquisition all the way through distribution over the top, over the air, over cable systems, Telestream has a solution as far as how to process the video, how to close caption, how to compress and expand, how to flip the different formats. But I'm quite partial to, in the bottom there, you have Inspect 2110. And that's for looking at your facility as far as 2110. As a holistic approach to see if everything's red light, green light, Prism, gonna talk about that for 2110, and good old-fashioned Tektronix Video, the classic waveform monitors and sync pulse generators, pretty much have it all, so it's good to be part of Telestream. Enough of that. SDI plant. We all know and love it. It's been around for a few decades now. We've all made a comfortable living using it, but it's time to move on, because SDI is a lot of cabling. So the early adopters of 2110 were the OB trucks. I work with Game Creek, NEP, and all the other people doing major events. And what they learned very quickly is they can get rid of a lot of copper, because an 18-wheeler is always up against, of course, space, but it's weight, 80,000 pounds. If they go over, they're in trouble. Well, they figured out by getting rid of all the copper, they can get rid of a lot of weight. They're in the business to tell a story. They're not in the business of hauling copper around over the interstates. So they learned very quickly by going to IP, they can add more cameras, they can add more effects, they can charge more for the event because they're telling a story. So the fact there is early adopters are the OB trucks. Where I see it happening most is real estate transactions. There's a lot of video facilities around the country that are on some very expensive real estate. And they realize by selling that real estate, they can move somewhere else and somebody can put up a high-rise on the footprint that they once had for their facility. So there's a lot of business reasons for the early adopters, but it's becoming more mainstream. And by mainstream, we need to be thinking about where you are on the transition. Maybe you're just thinking about it, maybe you're trying to avoid it, which is fine. But you need to be realizing now it's going to happen, and you need to be planning now for what you need to do to make sure that you're future-proofing yourself so you don't make mistakes. The purpose of this presentation is really to share the best practices and lessons learned. It's the things people wish they would have asked and didn't know, because there were no best practices 4 or 5 years ago. But now we've moved on. So just look how complicated that is. That's fundamentally your grandfather's SDI facility. But just look how much simpler things are going to be when we go to IP. Look at all that. You can put all kinds of information, all kinds of signals across a piece of fiber optic. But unfortunately, it's not that simple. Every facility I've been involved with is still a hybrid facility. It's still IP, SDI, BlackBurst, Tri-Level Sync, and Precision Time Protocol. So it's essentially an overlay. Even the facilities being built today are still hybrid. We're moving towards fully 2110 facilities, but not quite yet. The beauty of coax is delay is constant. I mean, the speed of light is the speed of light through air in a vacuum, but through a solid like copper, for example, it's roughly 80-some percent the speed of light. Every cable type has a different propagation speed, so if you match your cables through your facility, you know how much delay you have in the world of the speed of light. But we're going to IP, because in SDI, everything is a home run connection. Out goes to in, and you're doing video. In the world of IP, the beauty of it is, you're sharing the pipe with different signals, audio, video, timing information, intercom, for example. So everybody's sharing the same pipe, which means everybody needs to play nicely, taking their turn to get into that pipe from point A to point B. So where are we in the world of staffing the facilities? What I see in facilities, if they're doing well, they say, well, we're going to bring in IT people because we have some anyway, but we'll teach them about the video world, and the video people will learn the IT world, and everything will be fine. That's companies that are historically doing well. The companies that aren't doing so well, they want to cut as many people as possible. So you have to realize, I'm sure you probably have, we're all an asset or a liability on a spreadsheet, and they're trying to always do more with less. So fundamentally, we're doing everything with nobody, which is essentially the goal. So what they said is, let's get rid of all these video fossils, these antiquated video people like myself, and we'll bring in IT people, and the world will be wonderful. Well, that works until the first legacy problem comes up, like the next morning, and they need to bring people back that they got rid of. So they bring back consultants or part-time. So that really didn't work. They're two different disciplines that need to work together to figure this out. Two different mentalities. And what you can see by video engineers, as we all know, it's SDI, it's analog, it's BlackBurst, Tri-Level Sync. It's all about quality. Our brand is quality. Your job is quality, to make sure that it looks good and sounds good. So the quality of service, the actual physical connection, of course, needs to be healthy, or else you don't have a quality of experience. But quality of experience is what it's all about. So we need to understand the abstraction layers of adding SDI and IP into the same facility. So we need to understand IT technology. Where video, where the IT engineers, my son is a cybersecurity expert, so I can get a lot of insight from him, but it's all about the flow. It's all about configuration. It's all about how you divide up your network, how you have firewalls installed. So really, it's network time protocol is what's used heavily in the IT world, where in video, we need to be moving towards precision time protocol, and we'll get into that. But the thing of it is, with IT world, the data world, is it's not that sensitive as far as data loss. There's always time to resend, typically time to resend. And what that means, how long it takes for content to get from point A to point B, upload, download, it gets there when it gets there. If it's 3 seconds or 5 seconds, that's fine. Like my son really doesn't get complaints unless people don't get the content at all. They can't upload or download. But with video, we need every packet here the exact moment I need it. There is no resending, there's no time for that. So, but the IT world is more quality of service, because quite often this secure networks my son works with, he is not allowed to know what the content is. Did it make it? Yes, his job is done. He's basically a plumbing contractor, moving content from point A to point B. What it is, doesn't really need to get concerned with. That's a whole other level of security clearances. So the challenge there is to get video people and IT people to work together to understand the mentality, the methodology of how to get the job done. But of course, we need tools to do quality of service and quality of experience testing. So talk about standards at a high level. Well, the beauty of it is a lot of standards, a lot to choose from, but where the focus really is in the early days was SMPTE 2022-6. It was taking SDI and chopping it into little packets. The hank, the vank, the audio, the video, just chop it into little packets and send it on its way. It's a beautiful thing. It's all together, just segmented into packets. The problem is you actually want to do something with it. You're de-embedding, you're taking it apart, then you have to put it back together to move it to the next place. And anytime you start taking stuff apart, putting it back together, that can create problems. 2022-6 is great if you're just sending it from point A to point B as one big IP stream. AES-67 for the IP world of audio, that's a handy thing to have, and a lot of people in this room are experts on that. But where we really need to be focusing on is video people's IEEE 1588. That has been around for 30-some years. Every cell phone call you've ever made is based on IEEE 1588. It's how the timestamps are embedded into a cell phone signal, so you have seamless switching between cell sites. Been around. The financial industry, precision time protocol. And that's for keeping exact legal tracking of when something was bought and sold and when money moved around. So if you're looking for a PTP expert, if somebody has financial background on their resume, someone to consider. Okay, but the beauty of it is, we're special, we're video. IEEE 1588's not accurate enough. Timestamps are sent roughly every 1 to 2 seconds. We're doing video. So we had to come up with a SMPTE standard called 2059. SMPTE 2059, if you remember anything out of this presentation, is something you want to start thinking about, studying about, and understanding. It is the most underestimated challenge of this entire transition. Precision time protocol is all about precision. Because what we're trying to do is time our video facility with packets going up and down a network, roughly 8 times per second. So 1588, 1 to 2 times per second, 2059, 8 times per second. So a whole lot of more packets going up and down the network with timestamps trying to synchronize all your cameras, all your facility, to a common time base based on GPS. So 2059, study it, put it under your pillow, make it your own, because the more you know about it, the more you're going to be ready, because it's all about smoothness in a network, and you're timing your network with packets over a data network. SMPTE 2022-7 for seamless failover, you have your red network, your blue network, your primary, your backup. That way you have seamless switchover. If a packet's dropped, you just pulls it off the other stream and life is good. Let's jump down to the bottom. In fact, go to the next slide, it's a whole lot easier. SMPTE 2110. There's the roadmap, the dash zero, the dash 10 is about the video. Dash 10 is about the timing, dash 20 is the video, 2021 is buffer modeling. Because we're trying to make sure, the challenge in doing live television is you want low latency. How do you get low latency? You have small buffers. Something comes in and it goes right out. In the data networks, you can have big buffers because the latency is not a real-time upload or download. It gets there when it gets there. But we're trying to make sure that we're shaping, modeling a network so it is smooth as possible with the lowest latency, which means you have small buffers, which means packets need to be there exactly when you need those. 20, 22 is about compression, bringing compression into the world, because fundamentally 2110 is uncompressed. Well, in some cases, you want to have late compression, very low latency, very late compression, so that's still being worked on. I haven't seen much implemented with it, but it makes sense, especially if you're sending something from facility to a cloud environment. 23 is about your taking your quad link, where you have your 2SI and your square division for UHD, and you're actually having four streams in one, for streams 1, 2, 3, and 4, which make up your quad link environment. So that's a way of doing UHD. Dash 30 is for your audio, dash 31 is for your PCM audio, dash 40 is ancillary data, which is our closed captioning and whatnot, dash 50 is the way of doing the 2022-7 for your seamless switching. Finally, get rid of blanking. Somebody presented that to me several years ago, and I said, well, that's cool, but why are you making such a big deal about it? Well, it is a big deal. It means that the Hank and the Vank are gone, which means in our facility, you can change the aspect ratio, the resolution. It can go up to 32K by 32K. Why would I need a raster that's 32K by 32K? And a wise person spoke up and said, how about the ribbon around the stadium? 32K wide makes a whole lot of sense. So you're totally independent in your facility and your signal flow of what the format is. By getting rid of the Hank and the Vank, you have that freedom. It's an important concept. So we're trying to reduce forklift upgrades. So lessons learned in New World Order, getting to the good stuff. Continuous learning, you're doing it right now. You have to be doing it every day, unless you're minutes or hours or days or whatever away from retirement. And if you're near retirement, it's a good time when the management says we're going to 2110, a good time to say I'll play along until I cannot play along anymore and I'm out of here. I've actually had people, I do all day seminars with Telestream, and people come up to the end and say, hey, Carl, that was great. I learned a lot. And I always say, what did you learn? And I've had actually people and kind of whisper and saying, I learned it's time to retire. I go, that's good. If that's where you are in your career, congratulations. If you're not, start paying attention. So I do all-day seminars. I do lunch and learns and whatnot. So really, I look at it as like pre-retirement training is what I do. So if you're thinking about retirement, consider it when the boss says we're going to 2110. But continuous learning. If you're here for the long run, with all the tools we have now for learning, you know, Google, you name it, going to professional association meetings, continuous learning is something you have to do continuously. Professional associations, big fan of that, best thing I ever did for my career. The more you give, the more unexpected things come your way. Just a good old thing about karma. Configuration is everything. In the world of SDI, out goes to in, and you got a connection. In the world of IP video, you have absolutely nothing until you configure every drop-down, every radio button, every fill-in-the-blank, and hopefully there's no typos. If you got it right, congratulations, it works. If you got something wrong, it won't work. Or if it's really a bad day, you can actually take down the entire network with one device improperly configured. So that's an important concept. Or out goes to in was a nice thing in SDI, or configuration is everything. There's no guessing. You have to have standards in your facility, your best practices, your standards and conventions, whatever you want to call that, your facility. How do we configure things? And there's no guessing. This is how we do it, and this is what everybody needs to understand, everybody needs to do. SFP matching, small form factor pluggable, little modules that go into the back of a little cage. They're wonderful, they're flexible, and quite often they get confused because the print is very small, and they all look pretty much the same, and I've been to facilities. We can't get these two boxes to talk. Well, it's 850 nanometers on this end and 1310 nanometers on that end, it will never work. Well, let's match them, and hey, look at that, we have a connection. So things that didn't happen in the SDI world. Fiber cleanliness. You can take a BNC connector and drag it through a mud puddle and probably get a signal when you connect it up to something. With fiber, it has to be clean. You know, grease, hair, dirt in general is a problem. No patch panels. I realized this in the early days. I'm sure you've used a patch panel at least once in your career to patch around the problem. Those days are gone. You can't just pull out an SFP and say, let's move it over here and see what happens. There's so many different signals on one 10 or 20 or 40 gig connection. So you have to have a whole different approach to troubleshooting of not having a patch panel. How do you divide up a network where you can't patch around it? Redundancy. How much redundancy can you afford? It's a business question. Some people said, we're going to have two different pieces of real estate running two different vendors' hardware and software just in case something happens. Well, that's impractical. The OB trucks are always up against 80,000 pounds. They run very thin with redundancy. So what's your business case? How much room? How much money do you have? Data networks are not smooth. That should be in blinking fluorescent lights. Data networks are not smooth. They have no reason to be smooth. Well, we're not moving data. We're moving 4 packets per line of HD video. And I need them here exactly the moment they're needed. Not too early. I have small buffers. Not too late because the buffer runs out. So I need every packet here the moment that it's needed. Smooth. Data networks aren't smooth, but video networks must be smooth. Smooth and stable is the goal. You'll be tired of me saying smooth in the next 10 or 15 minutes, I guarantee it. Multi-layer IP adds another layer of abstraction. We have all the SDI challenges, now we're adding IP and PTP. It's kind of like your car. When I started working on cars, as my Motorhead days, working on cars built in the 60s and the 70s, they were analog devices. You had basic tools, you could fix anything. Now you take a car, it's 20 or 30 or more computers in it, and the dealer has to look at codes, and the dealer starts guessing. So you need tools, you need analysis, you need a whole different methodology of how you fix and approach a problem. Oh, that wasn't good. Multicast switches. Your switches must be multicast capable. They need to be precision time protocol aware. And that is a hardware option, which means you need to ask for it up front to be built into the device itself. And PTP aware, precision time protocol aware, means it gives a quality of service to precision time protocol packets. If I'm trying to time a facility with kilobit packets that are dealing with megabits of audio and gigabits of video, the kilobits cannot be crushed, stampled, and shoved aside in the chaos of the flow of all this content. So the switch needs to recognize that the PTP packets are the most important packet it has to deal with, gives the highest quality of service, meaning it comes in and goes out as fast as possible, has the number one priority. Without that, on a small network, you can get away with it. But we don't build small networks. We build big networks that only get bigger with time. And if it works today, you keep adding stuff, all of a sudden it doesn't work. And people say, what happened? Well, precision time protocol switches weren't ordered, and that's something you want to be thinking about today, even if this is something you're doing who knows where into the future, to make sure you're asking these questions. And they need to be non-blocking architecture. If you have 40 gig, 20 gig, 10 gig ports, you need to have the capability of the backplane within the switch itself of handling full bandwidth of all the ins and outs. Without that, you start adding, and all of a sudden, choke point, you start dropping packets, and the facility falls apart. Well, gee, what happened? It didn't do that before. Well, we keep adding stuff because everybody keeps adding stuff, and eventually it falls apart. Stream captures are priceless because you need something to have and to hold to beat a vendor over the head with. So by doing a screen capture of the actual display on our analysis equipment and a stream capture, now you have something tangible to say, here's what it looks like coming in. Look how beautiful it is. It goes to your black box, and here's the chaos coming out of your black box. What do we do to make it look good coming out of that black box? And as you do changes, you try different firmware, different configurations, you can see if it's cleaning up or getting worse, or there's no change. When in doubt, boundary clocks. Another takeaway that hopefully you remember at some point in the future, when in doubt, a boundary clock. A boundary clock is in a PTP-aware switch that allows it to be a lead clock in your facility if all else fails. But what it really is, a boundary clock is in a switch that acts like a distribution amp for precision time protocol. You have a lead clock locked to GPS. Then you have gigabits, hundreds of gigabits, or whatever, of content flowing in and out. Then you have switches, excuse me, microphone. Then you have switches that actually isolate the network So you have your lead clock talking to a boundary clock, then the boundary clock talks to the hundreds or thousands of devices actually in the facility. You do not want your lead clock having to do 8 times per second communication with hundreds or thousands of devices. So, I'm gonna move this, keep flailing around here. So what happens? You wanna isolate, which improves stability. So you want your lead clock talking to half dozen, a dozen boundary clock switches, not thousands of devices. Important concept, so you wanna make sure when you're dealing with this boundary clock. Where do we have boundary clocks? Where do we need boundary clocks? Have we even thought about boundary clocks? Do we have a PTP-aware switch that can actually be a boundary clock? The days of do-it-yourself, I would say, are over. I go to events and I talk to people, it seems like they're up to speed, and I say, who are you using for a system integrator? Oh, we don't do that. We have really sharp people in our facility. We're gonna figure this out on our own. All I can say is Godspeed to you. I do not recommend that. Some of the best system integrator minds in the world have been through the pain and suffering for the last 4 or 5 years. Get their input, get their advice on how to do this right, because if you don't, if you have unlimited time and unlimited budget, go for it. But nobody has that. You need to get it done and get it done right and be able to grow, because facilities only grow, hopefully. Learn Wireshark for utility and get on the web. It allows you to analyze your packets. So it's a good complement to the Telestream solution to say, here's all my different tools, which tool you need in your toolbox on a given day is good, but it's a good complement to the solutions that we have at Telestream. And it's free, just something to play around with. Test equipment is your friend now more than ever. You take your car to the shop to have it repaired, they'll just pull out a couple of wrenches and a screwdriver and say they're gonna figure this out. They have diagnostic tools. They hook up to it, they get reports, they get codes, they see history, they see what's going on. Then they start figuring out what they're gonna do next. Keep a library of all pertinent standards, because enough standards out there, and you're dealing with vendors and system integrators, they're gonna be throwing around these standards. So it's nice to be enlightened to know what the heck they're talking about and to be able to understand what's right, what's wrong. And the problem with standards, not as much problem now, but it was definitely in the early days, every vendor saying we follow the standard and you're not, and you get right down to the fundamentals, they're all following a standard, but it's interpretation of the standard. Well, we thought of it this way. Well, you thought of it that way, but the other 98% of the industry thought of it this way, so you're the problem. Well, we're not gonna change, we're following a standard. Well, then this is never gonna work. You have to decide that. Somebody needs to say, well, if you're not gonna do the update, we're not gonna waste any more time. Because everybody else did it this way, but you said, okay. So anyway, that just telling you where the finger pointing really gets out of control. Maintain a book of knowledge. If you figure something out, document it, because the person who figured it out last time might not be there the next time it happens. But the challenge of this whole transition is the problem you have today, you might not ever see again. And the vendors you're dealing with, because everything is different hardware, different configurations, different architecture, so having a problem that, in the good old days when I got started back in ninth grade, the old timers would say, you hit it here, you turn this clockwise, you wait till it warms up, whatever, the problem went away. Here's how you fix it. Over the phone, they could tell you how to do it. Those days are pretty much gone. You need analysis equipment, you need to be able to have what test equipment really does fundamentally. It allows you to have an intelligent conversation with someone who can actually figure out how to fix that problem, because that's what you need. You can't just say, hey, it doesn't work, fix it. Well, that doesn't get you anywhere. You need to be able to have intelligent conversation. Getting started, where do you start? You need a sandbox for the entire facility lifecycle. What does this mean? When you say, next year, we're thinking about moving towards 2110. What I recommend is setting up a sandbox, a lab. And you have that lab for the entire life cycle of this facility because, as I said, the days of taking something out of the box, hooking it up, SDI out to SDI in, are gone. It's all about configuration. So what I highly recommend is getting a PTP generator locked to GPS, like an SPG-8000A, and that is your time source. Then you have an analyzer. We actually looks at the signal. Then you build your entire network between those two devices. Because that allows you to be able to test. It allows you to be able to see, if I configure this device as I think I should, does it behave and do all the graphs and do all the timing information, my analysis, my trending, look like the rest of the network? If it does, invite it to meet the rest of the network and life is good. If it doesn't look anywhere near it, it's like, I'm not going to hook this up to my network, especially a live network, because you can't risk, well, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But if it takes down the entire network, when's a good time to have that happen? That's never a good time. So you need a sandbox for the entire life cycle facility. Day one, you need to say, here's where we test everything so we get to know what normal looks like. We all need to develop new muscle memory as far as how something looks like when it's normal. Unfortunately, where we are in this industry now, there's not a lot of pass-fail information out there. Well, if you go past this point, it's a problem. If you're under that point, you're good. Haven't gotten to that point yet. So what is normal in your facility might not be normal for somebody else's facility. Does it work? Does it look good? You need to develop that muscle memory to say, I know what normal looks like. Here's a big one. You need to justify test equipment in business terms. I learned this the hard way back in 1995. I was a lab rat in an R&D lab at IBM. I was the test guy, and a test guy has no friends. The QC people have no friends. That was my job. So I was always justifying test equipment. I go to a meeting, okay, we're doing this project. Here's what we're going to propose to a customer. Carl, figure out what they need for testing. Where do we start day one? And when we hand it off to them, what do they need to have in their toolkit? That was my job. It was kind of cool. So I walk in there, we need this, this, and this. Everybody said, okay, good job, Carl. Who's next? Okay, up. Somebody get up there and start presenting. Then new regime came along at IBM. The R&D lab was now supposed to be a profit center. Think of that. And I got up and presented my usual stuff, and management, who I never met before, said, Carl, what's my return on investment? Huh? I was a lab rat. I had no idea what that concept even meant back in 1995. I said, I'm sorry, I don't know what you mean. He goes, return on investment. I give you $1, I need $2 back in 18 months. How does that happen, what you're proposing? I have no idea. I got shot down in flames. Well, Carl, you need to come back with a more compelling story. Who's next? I went back to my little cube and I sulked for a couple days, talked to management. They said, Carl, things are different now. They run this lab as a business. Yeah, well, that's news to me. So I learned how to present things in business terms. Return on investment. What is the risk? There's always a cost of not testing. Can we afford that cost? Probably not. Legal issues, contracts, overtime, your reputation. You can destroy a business by not knowing what you're doing. So I started presenting that way, the cost of not testing. If this is of value to you, I do a 20-minute presentation just on what I learned the hard way back at IBM, because technical people are usually bad, and I was one, at speaking in business terms. When you walk into a business meeting, you need to speak their language. They want to hear about levels and packets and jitter, and they don't want to hear about any of that. What is the business risk, and how are you going to help me improve this business? Then they hear every word you're saying. If you don't present it that way, all they hear is blah, 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 go away, come back later. So you got to talk to business people in business terms. It's hard for us to do, and I enjoy helping people figure out how to make a story. Every drop-down radio button talked about that. Finger pointing, I've never done it. I'm sure you've never done it. Maybe you've read about it on the interweb. It's rampant. Because nobody really knows, so if I can blame somebody else, I'm off the hook. But nothing gets accomplished. We're trying to get the root cause. We need to drill down the abstraction layers. We need to see, because we're now dealing with the ISO 7-layer stack of the IT world, every layer needs to be healthy or else the chain falls apart. The weakest link in the chain. Well, okay. Where is that? How do I have visibility into that? How do I know if it's right, if it's wrong, and what does right and wrong look like? When I do my all-day seminars, I use a lot of medical analogies because everybody has a common reference point. And Einstein always said, to understand something new, you have to have a reference point, something you understand today, or else it's meaningless. So, intensive care ward. Need to run your facility like an intensive care ward. It's life and death. You're responsible for the life and death of your content, the reputation of the business, which means you need 24/7 monitoring. like an intensive care ward at a hospital, something's not going well, you want to know about it before it's a real big problem. You want to catch it as things are sliding in the wrong direction. And when something really goes wrong, what's wrong, where is it wrong, and where do I start to fix it? So you need probes around your entire facility monitoring the health of all your flows. You need to have someone or multiple someones become an expert in your switch configuration. The switch people I work with are brilliant, but they don't live there. They're not there 24/7. They can't be. So someone in your facility has to say, I'm going to be the switch guru. I'm going to know every in and out, every configuration this switch has, and know what it means if I change something. You need to have multiple people that can actually do that, because this is now our life. I mean, it's packets going in and out of a device that need to be treated appropriately. What's all about, as I said, is having intelligent conversation with system integrator and vendors. You need to communicate this. The canned answers on how to fix something. Have you tried rebooting? 3 times, okay? Have you tried firmware versions? Yeah. Tried 3 or 4 firmware versions. Still doesn't, okay? Now what do? Now it's called troubleshooting. You need to figure out what's right and what's wrong. Configure your precision time protocol system and try to break it. Once again, you have GPS lock, which is our atomic clock flying over our head, and that becomes the reference to your entire facility, which becomes the lead clock that sends out packets 8 times per second, hopefully to boundary clocks. The boundary clocks then deal with the communication back and forth between all your devices. Figure out as creatively as you possibly can every way to upset it, to break it, and see what it looks like when that doesn't work. Disconnect the GPS antennas. Let's see what happens. Hook something up that's improperly configured to the network. Because what can happen if things are really messed up at your lead clocks, you have a rogue precision time protocol clock taking over, meaning that something like an Arista switch or a Cisco switch can actually take over and start telling the network, I'm in charge here, which is fine, but it shouldn't be that way. It's not GPS locked. It's not the stability and equality that you need, but something, because in a pure PTP network, you don't need a changeover unit like we do in Blackburst and Tri-Level. You don't need that in a pure IP network, because the best master clock algorithm of PTP determines the pecking order of who steps in next. And one of the things to remember, if you don't do anything, it's by the lowest MAC address. It defers to the eldest piece of equipment in the facility. I don't think that's a great idea, but something steps in if you don't know what you're doing at all. You want to have a pre-configured pecking order of which device steps in when the one above it fails. And there's a voting process going on constantly in your network to say, who is worthy of being in charge here? If the master clock, the lead clock, falls apart, goes up in smoke, somebody disconnects the GPS antenna, what happens? Who steps in next, and who steps in after that? So it's a lot of configuration, and be very creative in breaking your PTP. Lessons learned as far as quality of experience, just kind of some other topics to brush on real quick. UHD is not 4K. For legal issues, I've had some lawyers say, when you say you're going to build a 4K facility, unless you're doing digital cinema, it's a 3.8K facility. So be careful in your language, because somebody could actually come back and say, you wanted a 4K facility, but they delivered a 3.8K, so you got ripped off. I mean, it's crazy, but some lawyers say that could be a problem in the future, so be careful using the word 4K. It's UHD, it's 3.8K. UHD presents bandwidth challenges. I mean, 3 gig is a challenge in itself. As far as I'm concerned, just between us, we could go to 1080p HDR wide color gamut, we could be finished for the rest of our career. But there's 4K, there's 8K, we actually have test equipment that does 8K. But the challenge is, the more Ks you have, the more gig you need. Just the laws of physics become a problem. So you can do 4-wire, where you have 3 gig on each of the 4 wires for your square division, your 2-sample interleave, or you can go to one connection of 12 gig. That's 12 gig SDI, typically over copper. But the Nyquist theorem and the laws of physics, unfortunately, play a role in the television industry. To get a 12 gig signal, you need frequency response of your physical plant to be 36 gigahertz. My goodness, that's RF. But we're asking coax to transfer a signal from point A to point B. and eye patterns and packet, and bit corruption happens. So it's a challenge. Is it simple? Yeah, one wire instead of four, but distances are really short. And if you're doing a small OB truck, yeah, fine. If you're doing a huge facility with hundreds of feet of coax everywhere, it's a challenge doing three gig. And we have equipment that does eye patterns and jitter for 12 gig. 25 gig, at one time that was like, oh no, that's too expensive. We can't go to 25 gig. Now 25 gig is pretty much standard procedure. Now 40 gig, 100 gig, that's a different story. But you can't fit a 12 gigabit signal for UHD into a 10 gig pipe. Can't be done. So you have to go up to 25 gig to make that happen. HDR, it's a wonderful thing if it's done correctly. Quite often it's not done correctly, because you can have HDR in the HDR domain look fabulous. But the problem is, the vast majority of people actually watching your content are watching on standard dynamic range. So how do you convert from HDR back to SDR? That's the challenge. I saw one parade somewhere that I knew was being shot because I helped get the people ready, but unfortunately they didn't listen to everything I suggested. So I see a bright orange horse in the parade going down the street. It's like, I grew up on a farm. There's no such thing as a bright orange horse. So the problem was they did it look really great in HDR, but they broke a lot of the rules of the down conversion process. So you end up with colors that aren't quite right. So always be looking at, and we have test equipment that does this, it'll show you the HDR domain, standard dynamic range domain, to see if everything's tracking, to see if you have any illegal colors. You can crank the heck out of HDR, and it looks great in that HDR domain, but the problem is the conversion back. HDR can be annoying, and the whole idea of our content is not to be annoying. It's not what we get paid to have annoying content. Because you have brighter screens now, go up to thousands of nits, because typically your television at home is around 100 nits, your cell phone is 400 to 500 nits, that way you can actually text while you're driving on a sunny day. Television sets can be 1,000 to 10,000 nits. 10,000 nits would burn the paint off the walls behind you, which is ridiculous. But for outdoors, it makes sense. So the challenge with HDR is to only save that specular highlight brightness for where artistically it makes sense. Like the shine off of a classic car bumper, the shine off of my head, something like that. You do not want it on the white jerseys, the white lines of the stadium or something, because it becomes annoying. It becomes fatiguing to be overly bright. So where you have your HDR, you want your specular highlights to be less than 5% of your screen, not 50% of your screen, because people will just get tired of looking at it. Wide color gamut is another problem. It looks great. Wide color gamut looks beautiful. The problem is displays are incredibly expensive, so I don't see catching on too soon in the consumer world, but it looks great because fortunately television, as we all know, has a certain gamut range, and we can see as human beings with normal color vision beyond that. So there's actually colors we can see that you can't create in television with wide color gamut. It opens up the palette, but still it's not what a normal person can see. So the down conversion back to 709's color space can be a problem, and you can actually have illegal colors. And the problem with illegal colors, certain encoders will choke. You send in a color that really doesn't exist in the down-converted domain, the encoder will say, I'm gonna freeze frame, I'm gonna go to black, I'm gonna do something, and that's not a good thing to be doing. So by keeping your colors legal within the legal range, interoperability is what we're trying to do in this entire industry, which means my signal will work everywhere it goes. If I bend the rules of interoperability, it's like the rules of life. If you follow the straight and narrow through your life, we'll probably do okay. If you get in your car and say, the rules of the road don't apply to me, watch out world, here I come, it might be a very interesting day. It's the same thing with video. Following the rules of the road is what we're trying to do for interoperability, to make sure that the signal goes everywhere it needs to go. It looks good, sounds good. Also, where it gets really nasty, I get involved with legal issues like at ad agencies. Someone says, we're gonna really crank, yellow is a favorite, we can crank the yellow and it pops off the screen. Look how good your mustard looks on that hot dog right now. Oh, I love that. It goes to air and it looks like the competitor's mustard color. And the lawyers get involved and it gets unpleasant. Or you have a car color. They oversaturate the car color and it looks great when everybody, the executives, oh, I like that. That pops off the screen. It goes to air
and it looks like a car color that doesn't exist. So people walking into the showroom saying, that's the car of my dreams, I have to have the one I saw on TV. Where is it? Sitting right here in the showroom. Oh, that's ugly, I don't like that color. Well, that's the one that's in the ad, oh, I don't like that. Well, that kind of ruins the whole ad campaign, so it gets nasty. So logos, food colors, sports teams better have color accuracy. Breaking news, if the fire truck's the wrong shade or whatever, nobody gets upset. But with advertising, food color, medical, my goodness, medical. That's really important. You want to make sure colors maintain fidelity. Test equipment is your friend. Can't overstate that. I've been to facilities that were doing 2110, and they said, oh, we didn't have budget for test equipment. You walk in there, and it's finger-pointing galore. I come in with a device, hook it up for a half hour, half a day, whatever, and say, here's the problem. Oh, we didn't know that. Well, you never would know that. You need to be able to have visibility into the system. All right, so remote connectivity, it's important. I'm running out of time here. We'll have some time for questions and answers. There's our test signal generators. Highly recommend SPG-8000A for your Blackburst and PTP. There's the classics, waveform monitors, everything from portable to the good old-fashioned shoebox and pizza box. Where the industry is going, where Tektronix Video, part of Telestream, is investing, is what's called the PRISM. This is SDI. IP, all in one box. It does everything from the very basics of confidence monitoring for the technically uninterested all the way up to the rocket science level. And we have what I like, can't wait to get my hands on it, couldn't get it for the show this week, is the little lunchbox analyzer that has a battery on the back. So it's a lot of flexibility. So you have the technical person on the go, they can have an SDI box that does IP to run around the facility. Inspect 2110, as I touched on earlier, this is for looking at the health of your entire system. Red light, green light goes to a certain depth, then you want to click on the prism to go for the deep dive. Anyway, questions and answers. Does anyone have any answers for me? I'm always open for answers. I have a question for you. I want you to be honest. Show of hands. At any time during my presentation, did anyone go online and look at your retirement portfolio? Usually get a hand or two. But anyway, hopefully that was of value. And I really wanted to share things I've learned the hard way, and so that way you don't stumble into the same traps. Maybe an answer.
One small question here. With PTP, if you lose, like, say, both sources, does it go into a free run? The only PTP clocking I've got into is a little ES67. So, I mean, I know you want to maintain that, but does it go into like a free run mode if you lose your clocking?
Well, you want to obviously avoid that, but you have the pecking order of how you configure. Actually, a boundary clock could actually take over. There's always something that will step in. You don't want just anything to step in, but that's what it's designed to do.
You never want that to happen, but it's possible, obviously.
Yes.
And then you mentioned the lowest MAC address wins. I thought it was IP address, or is it MAC address?
If you have, let's say, you take everything out of the box in the PTP world and just hook it up. Don't do any configuration. It's designed to go by the lowest MAC address wins as the lead clock. Then the second lowest MAC address. So basically, it's the oldest piece of equipment in that domain. I guess it's better than nothing. Yes.
Hey there, Carl. It's a lot of gain. There we go. Okay. I'm used to actually getting up on these things in the studio. Hey, Carl. So one question I have is there any work ahead or movement around, call it the SCUDI space, for anything that looks like getting these rates adapted to things that we can transport on existing and popular optical networks? So 12 gig SDI, you know, doesn't fit any of the OT or ODU layers today. It's an odd speed. We could stuff it into a faster one and waste capacity, for example, but we don't want to do that on the optical network side. So is there anything, or has there been discussions or industry interest in getting anything harmonized into popular transport speeds?
Popular.
Yeah, so multiples of 1.25 gig, 2.5, 5, 10, that stuff, you know, 11 or 12 gigs all kind of doesn't fit quite right. So, you know, 12 gig SDI, for example, would be an oddball here. that wouldn't fit into any of the, call it, existing sized pipes. It might have to go into something that would do a 40 gig channel, but then waste a lot of overhead, for example. Maybe two could fit into that. But I can't find specifications for that. So is this happening? Is this anything happening in that space?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
It's specifically designed single purpose use for doing 2110. And typically 25 gig is pretty much the baseline of what most people are doing, because that gives you multiple HDs or one UHD and some HDs. So you really need purpose-built, dedicated networks. Because really, as I said, PTP is where it falls apart. Small buffer models, smoothness is the challenge. We can talk later in more depth, but I think for the time I have, that's all we have time for. So thank you, everyone.